The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to We the People. You are joining Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
And Lisa.
And Lisa, our parent guest. She's a volunteer and a guest. And she's the one who knows about the topic, so it was pivotal that we bring her in.
She's going to keep us straight.
Because the only thing, you know, we know about dyslexia is just, okay, nothing. There you go. That's how much I know. But we're going to learn. It's going to be great today. Yeah. So let's see. First hour, we're talking about a bill, specifically a bill in California that has to do with dyslexia. But moreover than that, the issue of dyslexia, because there were some really basic things that that I learned about right out of the box. I knew I didn't know anything, that the schools actually don't say that kids have dyslexia. Like, what? They've had this forever. So anyway, the schools don't term it that. Which is kind of where the problem begins. So we're going to talk about that. Second hour, we are going to be on the phone with Aviv. I don't really know how to say his last name. We're going to learn about that. It's R-E-G-E-V. It's fairly short, fairly straightforward, but I don't know how I pronounce it. And he is in a film called Beneath the Helmet. It's from high school to the home front, and it's all about the Israeli army, but not the Israeli army after you're already in and down the road and all the politics. It's about what happens when you leave high school and everyone goes into the army.
Yep. The process.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. I mean, it's an entirely different cultural norm. Honestly, everybody goes into the army.
Everybody goes in.
So that's an entirely different deal. So we'll be doing that. Let's see. By way of information, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us, and the website has everything about, it's got a ton of links for the first half of the show, and it also has links to the film Beneath the Helmet. It has links to that in the second half. All that stuff is on there. We also are airing now on WNJC 1360, the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. That's Wednesdays from 1 to 2, and that would be in Philadelphia and all the way out to the Jersey Shore.
That's when I pick up my accent.
Yeah. The second hour Bill will be changing half. His vocal pattern. Nutcase.
Yeah, well.
So anyway, another
one.
Yeah, an hour of the show's going that way. So if you have ideas for programs that would be of interest to people all over the country, and or you have friends, relatives, folks that live on the East Coast, and they're like, well, hey, we need some shows about this or that, email us. So go to wethepeopleradio.us. You have an email for Bill. You have an email for Aaron. You've got phone numbers. We're pretty, we hide right out in the open.
I have my own email?
Yeah, you do.
I better answer
I
that.
Know, yeah. Okay, you should email me. Email me. You could call Bill. He's not really all that great with the phone either.
I'm pretty good on a phone. I will call you back.
Bill cooks, though. So, you know, and he's tidy. So he makes
up. If you got any recipes, I'd be interested in that.
Don't get me started.
Sorry.
Okay, so we've got that. There was one other thing that was, I know. Since we are privately funded, I was going to direct you to the sponsorship page, too. And now that we're airing on the East Coast and we have a much wider net that we're casting, the website's pulling about 3 million.
We wish.
Freudian slip. About 3,000 hits.
That's next week.
A month. So it gets really good traffic. We're also very, very prolific on Twitter, which is how the East Coast Station found us. Wonderful. So if you know folks that have an online component to their business, something outside a brick-and-mortar store in one particular location who would like exposure, we're open. And it doesn't have to cost them a bunch. We can tailor this to whatever they want. So we can send it out in our email blast. We can talk about them on the radio. Lots of good ways to get out there. And if you just want to keep conservative radio alive, just go on there. We've got a PayPal link. You can do 10 bucks a month. You could do 10 bucks one time. You could do, you know, that 3 million. That could be you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in this world, what'll 10 bucks get you anymore, right?
Well, you know what? It adds up. It's kind of funny.
Does.
So we're basically supported by our listeners, and I hope you put this on Facebook, shoot it out on Twitter, and honestly, I got to tell you guys, I could do a whole commercial on Twitter. So for all of you that are thinking, oh, Twitter Schmitter, you know, what a pain, another new thing, irritating, takes time. No, it's simple, and it's extremely effective because people who use Twitter click on the links, follow stuff, and they're hungry for information. It's not as slow as Facebook. And if you walk away from it for a month, nothing piles up. It's the ultimate tool. So, there's all my spiel.
I could even use it. I got on it the other day and tweeted.
I saw that. Bill is on Twitter for the first time. They sent me a little note. They're telling on you.
I know.
But we all know we're being fully supervised on the web anyway, so that's not really all that shocking. Okay. So those are all our notes and info, except for the phone number, 530-605-4567. And if you're listening online, it's right on the front page. And so if you're pretty much not listening online, you should go online.
If you have dyslexia, that might be a problem.
There's no P in dyslexia.
Oh. Another Freudian slip.
It is no longer called dyslexia. They got rid of that part.
Hey, when I went to school,
at least I told you it was going to be hard. It was going to be difficult. Bill went to elementary school in a place called The Bend. In the Bend, they called King Tut Technocticon. Whoopsie. So if you had any special needs there, you were out of luck, pretty much.
I survived.
So, we all good? Did I forget anything? I had quite the laundry list. Bob, how are we doing?
I think we're all good.
Okay, right on. So I think he's already – have you already called Lisa, our other Lisa?
Oh, I thought this was Lisa.
No, we have multiple Lisas. Oh. We have a lot of Lisas today. We're Lisa'd up.
So we're having Lisa and Lisa.
Yep. Okay. So if you would call her, she's right there on your purple Post-it note there.
Momentarily.
Okay. Lisa in studio.
Yes.
Lisa the mom. Talk to us about this. For folks who maybe don't have kids in school anymore – or who did and didn't figure out their child had a problem and don't know anything about this, why should they care? How does this affect everybody?
So 1 in 5 students struggle to learn to read, write, and spell. And sometimes it's identified and sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
There are proven interventions that help them. And we... The other term for struggles in reading, writing, and spelling is dyslexia.
Okay.
A school will, if identified or qualifies for special education, they'll use the term specific learning disability.
So if a kid actually has dyslexia, what does that mean that they do? You know, what's the...
Yeah, the symptoms to look for.
For all of us dum-dums, what is that?
The symptoms to look for when they're really young is difficult reading single words, such, you know, like on flashcards and things like that. They'll have difficult connecting sounds and letters. They'll confuse small words like at and to. They could have reversals of B's and D's when writing.
Mm.
But I have met adults who tell me they can have reversals with J's and G's.
What about numbers? Do they switch numbers around as well?
That can be a component of it. And if it's truly a numbers issue, they can use another term called dyscalculia. Oh.
It's like bad calculator?
Dys. Oh, I wish. I don't know if Lisa can hear me right now, but dys, if we know, dys means something in Latin. And I'm not recalling it at this moment.
Lisa, feel free to jump in anytime.
I have students that actually, regarding the numbers, that will confuse like 9 and Q. And also you have inversion. So W and M can also be...
So it could go upside down, backwards, forwards.
Mm-hmm. And M's and W's can be tricky for some students.
Yeah. Lisa, we need you to speak just a little bit louder or get closer to your phone, if you would.
Okay.
Bob's got your sound all the way up, but the higher we do it, the more it like has this weird fuzzy sound in the background.
And Lisa, can you tell us where you're calling from? What part of California?
I'm calling from Southern California. I'm in Orange County.
Okay.
So we have North County, North California and Southern California represented here.
All right. And so you are a parent member of decodingdyslexia.com. Sure, easy for me to say. I have on here on the website, but for folks that aren't looking at it, it's a network of parent-led grassroots movements across the country concerned with the limited access to educational interventions for dyslexia within the public education system. We aim to raise dyslexia awareness, empower families to support their children, and inform policymakers on best practices to identify, remediate, and support students with dyslexia. So it's a pretty straightforward mission. I mean, it's not all that...
We wanted to keep it simple.
Not asking a lot. So how is it that we don't already have dyslexia figured out in school? How has that happened? Lisa in Southern California, do you have any...
I wish we had an answer for you. I went to the training through Dyslexia Training Institute, and I read this article, and it was talking about how dyslexia, it was 102 years ago that it was first identified, and the person initially called it word blindness. Because of some of those things that Lisa was talking about, how they don't see things like the prepositions, or they might guess at words that have the first letter, will guess another word that's very similar. And I don't know why it is. I think it has to do with some of the IDEA laws that came into effect that didn't necessarily include, the federal law does include dyslexia. It's the states that have fallen behind.
Interesting, and usually the federal government is the big disappointment, so odd. And Toby online here, I just finally logged into the chat, little FYI, one thing I left off my list. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will see a brown bar across the top, and it says during the program from noon to 2 here west on the West Coast time, you just click that, and that will take you to the chat room. It's a great place to put in information and ask questions. So, Toby, being the smart person they are, tells us that dys, like for the dyslexia part, dys means difficulty. So that's what we were after earlier, and they were trying desperately to tell us, but we actually had to be logged in to read it. Early symptoms, delayed speech, chronic ear infections, and difficulty rhyming.
Very true. So a student I know used to say era boa versus bow and arrow.
Oh, wow.
And sometimes they'll have sequencing issues. So like era boa, bow and arrow, and sometimes they have issues with spaghetti, hamburger, those types of
multiple syllables, they
of words.
Switch around.
And sometimes it's going to show up with a speech evaluation first. And thank you, Toby, for being on chatting live with us right now. We appreciate it.
We're always happy for the input.
Yes.
The multiple input. We just have to be watching.
If Toby has any thoughts on why she thinks it's not being addressed, feel free to type it in for us.
There you go. All right, we're going to take a quick break so everybody can reconnoiter here. We will all be online when you come back with us. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back with the Lisas. We're talking about dyslexia and what's going on in California legislation, actually. Welcome back to We the People. We the People are getting situated here still. 25 minutes in and we're still situating.
We got dyslexia.
All right, we got all our microphones up. We've got our computers on.
One thing I wanted to say before I forget.
Bill's got his headphones on, so now he's all reared up.
Oh, yeah, I'm professional
go,
now.
Go.
Do I look good?
Go,
do
Bill.
I look?
You do. You look awesome.
I know someone who is a very successful business person that has dyslexia. You would never know it. So anybody out there that's, you know, challenged with that, it doesn't necessarily hold you back.
And I am thankful that you've brought that up, because they do have gifts and they're totally talented. And there's a wonderful website called Dyslexic Advantage. And there's a book about the advantages of being dyslexic. And they are our future entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, you know, NASA and Google recruit them. And
really?
Yeah.
I did not know
yes,
that.
Yes. And a lot of our actors like Fonzie and Tom Cruise and Whoopi Goldberg and... Their list goes on.
That's a very divergent group.
There's amazing people who, and they're surgeons and they're doctors. So we don't want to leave out 20% of the population who can do amazing things our community.
Oh, this person is an avid reader.
Yes.
And like I say, owns his own business, has had his business his whole life. And I think maybe part of that was because he had trouble working for somebody else. And so he just did it himself.
And did I mention entrepreneurs?
Yes.
High percentage of entrepreneurs like Virgin Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just see things a little bit different.
Which is a strength.
Yeah.
And they're out-of-the-box thinkers.
Right.
And they're totally gifted.
Yeah, so it doesn't have to be a disability.
But the public school system really, you know, all those things you just said, out-of-the-box and the rest of it, they find that irritating. Get in your chair. You know, which is why we've got, you know, tons of kids on medication and stuff like that. And
well, isn't that usually the first response with a lot of folks?
A lot of times,
you want to medicate them because they're different.
My nephew, who just cleaned up on the academic decathlon, cleaned up statewide. The winning school, he had half the points of the winning school. He's a great runner. He's funny.
Oh, yes.
But yeah.
And that's important. They are athletic. They're mechanical. And Toby has typed in 3D visual spatial skills. They're very, very creative. And we're thankful that Toby's joining us today. And then, Lisa, is there anything you want to add to that?
One of the great books, Ben Foss, he says that there was a study that said that 35% of American entrepreneurs are dyslexic. And the book that you mentioned actually describes why that is, how they can see things and kind of predict things because of the way that they think. And my son actually got into a school because of his thinking, the three-dimensional thinking. He got into a special art school. He's in seventh grade. So
interesting.
It's pretty amazing what they can do.
And then one thing we wanted to make sure that parents, educators, students knew that there are interventions that can help them. They're multi-sensory interventions, and some of them they have different titles, you know, but it's called multi-sensory structured language programs that are available. Some of those titles include Linda Mood Bell. Some of those titles include Orton-Gillingham instruction. And Lisa, is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think that it's important that the intervention, a lot of times it's called an Orton-Gillingham approach. It is, you have to have specific training. So you can't just bring in one visual thing and say that's multisensory. It's very systematic, so that someone goes through and learns about a syllable type. There's seven syllable types. And then they move to the next one. They don't move to the next one until they have the first one down. So it's very systematic and sequential. It's also explicit. So it explains, you know, a G says J after E, I, or Y, that when we were learning English, we didn't know that. It just sort of innately happened. So part of this instruction is it's very specific and very explicit.
That's the tricky part. So you have a whole bunch of kids moving on, and then you have a few kids who aren't moving on. So, okay, you're a parent who doesn't know anything about this, and like me, I was a parent all of a sudden at 21, 22 years of age with a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And the 7-year-old really, I believe he probably has dyslexia, because I actually at one point had him tested for a learning disability, and the school said, no, he's fine. But struggled in math, all these things that you're saying. And, you know, over the years, I've learned that probably that this was his issue. And he wound up doing very poorly in school ultimately, but like your list says, had very good social skills. He was creative. He was artistic. He had all sorts of things like that. But when it came to the reading, slow as molasses. And when it came to, for heaven's sakes, word problems in math, that was like the, you know, disaster struck. He couldn't pull all that together. So probably should have been identified. Would he have been pulled out of class? Is this a program you can do in class, or is it something you have to be separate?
Well, I have a feeling that we're all going to have something to say on that. So something that Toby highlighted, which we totally agree with, Lisa and I,
Toby,
for
sorry.
Sure, is that these interventions can help all students. So there are ways to instruct the whole class or have a language-based school that focused on that. And in some areas, they're fortunate enough to have it. In Shasta County, we have very, very limited resources. And I have a feeling like Lisa will probably have more to say about that too. The multisensory helps all. So that would be an amazing thing if we could make some quick changes. Well, more than that, because training is involved and things like that. But some cultural changes within education to help those students, the 20%, but also it helps ESL students, English as a second language student. So it helps many, many people. It's not just going to help your dyslexic student. Also, I think it's really important to note that they can, what's called, we have eye reading, which is with our eyes looking at books and things like that. But we also have ear reading, which means they could visually see it on like an iPad, and then they could hear it through their earphones, and that will help with vocabulary building and things like that. But the question you asked, Lisa might want to respond to.
Okay. When we come back, we will have her respond to that. Lisa, you've got a couple minutes to mull over your answer.
Okay.
You know, how can we best do this? Because there are probably a lot of people out there that are frustrated with their child because they're not doing well and they don't know why. There's a real reason for it. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be back with you in 2 minutes.
Basketball game. Thinking be a kicking ass and kicking down me. Well, a top down, get around, shooting the line. Summer is here and Johnny's beating the line. But Johnny can't read. Summer is over and he's nothing to see. You know that Johnny can't read. He never learned that.
Welcome back to We the People. You're joining Aaron, Bill, Lisa, and Bob here in the studio, and we have Lisa in Southern California on the phone with us. We're talking about the subject of dyslexia. So, Lisa in studio, why don't you reiterate where we're going with this, since you know what you want to talk about.
Okay, so I believe Lisa in Orange County will be answering what can parents do if they don't know anything like...
So you brought up an excellent point about the testing, because we met with our legislator and they asked the question. We had about 15 parents, and they asked how many people in the room have an IEP, an individual education plan through special ed, and only a couple people raised their hand. And I countered with the question, how many people have been tested and were not qualified for special education. And almost every single person in the room raised their hand. Those that didn't, you know, raise their hand the first time. Some of the issues that we're facing is that the kids are not being identified for special education. They don't have behavior issues. And one of the reasons that the bill, the AB 1369 has come about is that kids are falling through the cracks. So they, maybe they're tested and they don't get an IEP, but if they don't get an IEP, what do they get? So in California, one of the things that the schools offer is what's called RTI. Special Ed has 10 zillion acronyms. It stands for Response to Intervention, which is supposed to be an intervention to help with a bridging of academic gap. So this is a general education intervention that's supposed to bring the child up to grade level. So that's the whole purpose of this RTI intervention. The problem is that the intervention did not match the need. So a lot of times they're not giving this multisensory, evidence-based intervention. I just spoke at a board meeting, a school board meeting the other night, and my analogy is this. If you have a mechanic who's given a curling iron and a glue gun, you're not going to get very far. They need the right tools. So right now in California, with all of the changes in education, many of the schools are developing another acronym, MTSS, and it stands for Multi-Tier System of Support. And the idea is that if a child's struggling in reading, that they have an intervention in general education that's going to help bring them up and support them. And the advocacy is for this particular intervention to be part of every single school district's program. I mean, I had a situation where an RTI, this intervention, was given for a year and a half, and it made, I don't want to say zero difference, but it did not do what it needed to because they were using a curling iron.
And that's a long time, a year and a half to burn in a kid's education. That's you're too far behind in some cases to catch up, depending on how far behind they were to start with.
And the secondary consequences of that is emotional, psycho-emotional.
Yep.
You've got kids that are trying to do, they're trying to keep up. They're not able to, there's so much to say.
Sure, when they're little, it's not that big a deal because everybody's sort of doing their own thing. But by the time you get out of elementary school, you're headed to junior high, you stick out like a sore thumb.
Well, and on top of it, these students have average to above average IQs. They're very aware of what's going on around them.
Yeah, I would imagine that just adds to the whole.
Is there different levels of dyslexia? I mean, could you have like a mild case or a severe case? Or how's that work?
Certainly. You can have a mild case. You can have a severe case. The more severe cases might actually involve where you're, I can't think of the word, Lisa, where you have difficulty writing.
Yeah, dysgraphia.
Dysgraphia, thank you. Another dys word. They might have very severe dysgraphia, and that's a physical writing
difficulty
issue.
Difficulty with writing, okay.
And the other thing is I find that there's some kids who learn to read. They use some coping strategies to learn to read. So their reading is below average, but they're able to get by. And then what happens in middle school and high school is their writing. They can't spell worth beans because that aspect hasn't been addressed.
Yeah, I could see that. Toby also brought up a good point that 80% of the prison population is illiterate.
And we also have stats on the website from John Corcoran's foundation. 42 million people cannot read. Healthcare costs are affected because they cannot read. Poverty, 43% of adults at the lowest literacy levels live in poverty. That's 3 out of 4 food stamp recipients perform in the lowest levels of literacy. 90% of welfare recipients are high school dropouts.
How do you relate that to dyslexia, though? I mean, how can you...
Literacy and dyslexia?
Right.
20% of the population struggle to read, write, and spell, 1 in 5.
Okay.
And if we can identify early, offer appropriate interventions, provide testing and classroom accommodations, assistive technologies like audiobooks, so that they can access grade-level curriculum at their IQ ability...
Sure.
We could turn these outcomes around.
Well, and it's not reinvent the entire school system. It's not really that hard. If you know what you're dealing with, and you're dealing with professionals that are trained to teach, so you add a few more tools to the toolkit, and you... So
I think, Lisa...
Okay, so why are we still talking about it?
Well,
I mean...
Exactly. Well, and that's why there's parents, fortunately, that are standing up and starting to share their concerns.
That explains why you guys are doing
this. And thank goodness for Decoding Dyslexia, the grassroots movement, who have pulled parents together. And in California, we're working on the AB 1369 bill, and I'm going to let Lisa talk about it because she's way more versed in it, and maybe Toby will also chime in as well.
Toby is behind the scenes, but she is amazing. She's helping us with this bill. So there's four tenets to the bill, and it's basically one is the definition. It defines it and basically will allow school districts to use the word dyslexia because it's defined under specific learning disability, and then they have to state what it is. So they'll be able to put dyslexia on there. The second is screening. So the bill, AB 1369, allows for annual screening, kindergarten through third grade, with the idea that we're going to catch all those kids in the gap, hopefully. And then there will be a notification to the parents. That's an issue, is the communication. It outlines the specific intervention that we've been talking about, an evidence-based instruction. And then the last thing is teacher training, because, as I said, you can't really do this intervention without training. And the training expectation is not just for special education teachers, but for general education teachers and psychologists. It's really important that the training be for identification of risk factors and what you see in the classroom. I mean, we have a teacher that speaks a lot, and she said that she's been a teacher for 30 years, and only in the last couple of years did she realize about dyslexia, and she says she wishes she could have gotten all those kids back. So it's about identification and also being able to provide the intervention.
So I can, you know, I always try to, in the back of my head, listen to the people who are not speaking on this program. And so I'm thinking, all right, if I was listening to this, I would be thinking, well, okay, you have a lot of parents who don't know anything about it. A lot of parents resist their child being labeled as having any kind of a special need. That's a big deal. That actually is why I quit teaching. I had parents who required their kids to go on to junior high when they had failed my English class. And because they had pull in the school district, the principal changed their grade. Those kids eventually either wound up in continuation school and or dropped out. So you have parents that are kind of a problem. Can this be done? I don't know how easily is the right measure, but how tough would it be to integrate these kids into the regular school day if the teacher had the tools to do this, what is it called,
multi-sensory
mm-hmm. Teaching process? How many of these kids could stay in regular class if their teachers had that skill?
A dyslexic child doesn't need to be in a special day class.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
It's actually...
Because they're not special ed in the sense that they...
Yeah.
Because of
they
the IQ.
They have an average to above average IQ.
Right.
They have a print disability. And with the appropriate accommodations and assistive technologies and interventions, they can do amazing things.
What does interventions mean?
The intervention is the...
Like you say that there's an issue and you deal
No, the
with
intervention
it?
Would be...
In the papers the you multi, gave me that I gave you
multi-sensory structured language program.
Okay. All right.
So those types of interventions. And then assistive technology.
I think you're right. They think the label is difficult. I interviewed several kids for our dyslexia awareness, and I asked them the question. I said, what did you think when your parent told you you had dyslexia? And the range was everywhere from surprised, grateful, relieved. There was no child that said... That was horrible. They were all glad to know
because they knew something was wrong. They just didn't know what it was.
Exactly. And when you're in second grade and you're doing homework and you're crying and the parents yep. crying, everyone knows there's something wrong and there's shame. I think one of the reasons, my opinion is, one of the reasons that we haven't gotten farther in this is that parents don't speak out. They, you know, you get around parents and they'll say, hey, what's your, you know, what's your child doing for sports? You know, how are they doing? What's their stats? But we don't sit around and say, hey, my child can't spell the word what. What about your child?
Yep.
And so decoding dyslexia has brought that shame and put it aside and allowed parents of dyslexic children to gather and talk, come together. And, you know, I'll just say this now while we're talking about it. Next week, or actually it's not even next week, in a couple days on Wednesday, we're having a lobby day where we're going to meet in Sacramento and promote this bill and ask our legislators to support it and support our kids and support struggling readers.
Nice. And we have all that on the website for you. The bill, petition, and also a link to decodingdyslexia.net. So we're going to come right back with the Lisas and finish up to the top of the hour. We're talking about dyslexia. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. So there you go. There's a dyslexia song. Only Bob. Only Bob could find it.
What's it saying?
Yeah.
Is this love or dyslexia?
Ooh. Wow, we got to listen to that one again.
Sometimes I see things right from left, and I know that's not right at all. Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper.
Alice Cooper. Okay, well, speaking of famous people, you're rejoining We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We are finishing up the top of the hour with our topic of dyslexia. The second hour, we'll be having a guy from Israel who's going to talk to us about how they move from high school to the Army and why and how that all works out for them in their culture. I think it'll be a really interesting look, and you'll like it. So, okay, back to the topic at hand. Bob did a little homework over here in his handy-dandy world. He found us some famous people that he said we were going to be wowed by.
Yeah, names of some of the many talented and accomplished individuals who are dyslexic or historic figures who had that pattern in the entertainment industry. They include Jennifer Aniston, Harry Belafonte, Jim Carrey. You mentioned Whoopi Goldberg. Also on this list is Jay Leno, Keanu Reeves, Billy Bob Thornton, Vince Vaughn. Some of the
love him. He's hilarious.
Some of the artists, designers, and architects, Leonardo da Vinci, Tommy Hilfiger, Pablo Picasso.
I see Einstein.
That explains
on the
a
list.
Lot about the art, though.
That's right. on the inventors and scientists section, Albert Einstein, also Thomas Edison, and Anne Bancroft, not the actress, but the Arctic explorer. Alexander Graham Bell is another. Military heroes include George Patton and Stonewall Jackson.
So apparently you can pretty much be whatever you want to be.
And you could even be a writer.
And musicians include Cher, John Lennon, and Bob Weir of the Grateful Dead. And athletes include Magic Johnson, Muhammad Ali, and Nolan Ryan.
That's right. Mm. So well, before...
Maybe I'm not damaged.
No.
Even though you can't tell left from right.
You're not.
So does it seem to me I should stop making fun of Bill?
I have issues with left and right, too.
Oh, okay. Well, I can make fun of you, too, then.
I have to do L for left, right. I have to write for right.
Well, that's what still... those kids meant when they put an L on their forehead every time they look at me.
They're trying to figure out which way they're going, and they just don't know
I feel
it.
So much better now.
Okay, so before we run out of time here,
here is
like some important topics. Decoding Dyslexia California has a website, and we would like you to join us there. And it is decodingdyslexiaca.org. decodingdyslexiaca.org. We would love you to sign up for the email list so that you can be blasted out how to stay informed, how to participate. Like Lisa mentioned, we do have a lobby day on March 25th. And we, on our website, have information on AB 1369. We definitely need petitions signed. We need letters written to our assembly people, members. And the more, the better, because then it's like the outcry of the community that says we need help. And decodingdyslexiaca.org. And Lisa, is there anything you were going to focus on in the last couple minutes we have on the radio?
I just wanted to say, if you have listeners who are not in California, that Decoding Dyslexia is in all 50 states as well as four provinces. So, and there are, I can't remember exactly, but 18 states that have already passed laws. So if you're out of California, go to the main Decoding Dyslexia site and you can see for your state what's going on.
And then Decoding Dyslexia for Lobby Day does require registration. So when you're at our site, please let us know you're attending. And if you, there's a possibility of a webinar this evening. If you'd like to join us, just let the decodingdyslexiacalifornia.org page know that you'd like to attend that. Via web, of course. And then some other things that we would like to make you aware of, too, is there's the Congressional Dyslexia Caucus. It's bipartisan, which means both houses should be concerned about this. And, again, there's the Congressional Dyslexia Caucus. We'll make sure the link gets up later today.
And actually, I just posted the full committee hearing.
Okay, great. And then that's the other thing. There's the full committee hearing.
The caucus. I'll do that right now.
That happened September 18th. And Sally Shayerwich from Yale, which I may have just pronounced her name incorrectly, said that there is an action gap, not a knowledge gap. There's been research for years on how to help dyslexic students.
Nice. So my understanding is that this is my guess here, that if we are still having all this, we're still talking about it, it's not really, I know labels are bad, but, you know, it's a good word, that if kids aren't being identified, how's that?
Qualified for special education.
If that's still not happening, what the heck is going on in our schools and why aren't they doing it?
Anybody want to chime in on that?
I would say that there's been a lot of, there ends up being a lot of focus on the kids who are being disruptive. And I find that the kids who have dyslexia kind of get by, and they're not a focus. And I think the schools feel like they're doing something because they have this RTI program, but they're not realizing it's not effective. And, you know, our school district said something very interesting. They said one of the things that they want to work on is getting the data and having the data drive the intervention. And that's a key point, because if you gather all the data in the world, doesn't matter if it doesn't drive the intervention.
Yeah, no kidding. If the kid never gets any help, they wind up dropping out. They wind up with our giant prison population, all that other bad stuff. Well, ladies, how tough is it to get the word out? Are people pretty, you know, pretty interested in having this promoted, or no? Is this a hard sell?
I think we have over 5,000 electronic petitions. I'm sure Toby can update us with more. But we still need to get the word out, because the parents are isolated, I think.
And so, you know, ultimately we need teachers training. That's part of the goal. Again, identification of the students, use the word. Again, train the teachers, offer the accommodations, offer the assistive technology. And the more parents, the more grandparents, the more educators that want to join in on this, the better. Because we all have a voice and we can make a difference. We can actually save lives if we make these changes.
That's awesome. So I've added all that other stuff. We may add things later, so come back to the page for today's program. It'll be on there. Send the link to your friends. Send it out through Facebook. Put it on Twitter, that kind of stuff. The address will not change. It'll be there for you. So you are listening to We the People Radio. We've been joined by Lisa from the North State, Lisa from the South. And thank you very much, Lisa, on the phone for pitching in on this. Thank you, Toby, on the chat and everybody else. That was very, very helpful. We're going to come back with a different guest, different topic. We're going to talk about the Israeli army from the high school standpoint, like going in, you know. It'll be fun. You'll like it. Bob, anything?
Yes, hour two of We the People is next on KCNR, Shasta Redding.
You're the best. Welcome to We the People.
Good afternoon.
I guess I kind of slurred my words. It's a little early to be drinking. Welcome to We the People. You're joining Aaron Ryan.
And Bill Cundiff.
And Bob Martin.
There you go.
And if you're listening in Philadelphia, good morning.
Good. Yeah. Well, they're, yeah.
Good morning, good afternoon,
and it's,
whichever it may be.
They are at WNJC 1360. We are part of the Conservative Commandos Radio Network. We actually are physically in Northern California, and for those of you on the East Coast, it's the other part of California, not the part you see on TV. We're like outside the band of the land of fruits and nuts.
Actually, I
messed we're in the
that
part with like a lot of trees and lakes and stuff like that. What?
I was slightly incorrect there. It's only morning if you're on the West Coast,
if you're
but
here.
You're listening to Philadelphia.
I know.
Yes.
They're from 1 to yeah. 2, so they're in the afternoon too. So, all right. Today, we have a great show for you. You're going to love this. Lots of us are following the issues in Israel, and we're watching what goes on in this tiny little country that's surrounded by a whole bunch of people who want to wipe them out. And I think most of us are aware that they have basically a standing army in that they is that your phone?
I think
Bill.
That was my
Bill
phone.
Is the weakest link today.
It's my Philadelphia fans trying to call me already.
Yeah.
I told them not to call me.
I think that's probably happening. I grew up in Connecticut. I took Bill back there one time, and they were snippy with him. I told him it's just the way they are.
It's a culture.
I know. It was funny. So anyway, Aviv?
Regev.
Regev.
Yes.
I keep wanting to change your name. Bob told me how to say it, and I keep being a knucklehead. Aviv is in a film called Beneath the Helmet, and this kind of chronicles a number of young men, and they're young women too, but in this particular thing, it's young men, going from high school to the army. And so we're just going to let you tell us what you'd like to tell us about this particular experience, because it was really interesting.
Very interesting.
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely. It's taken us months to get a date that we were all available, so I'm really glad it finally happened.
Yeah, well, this extraordinary film, Beneath the Helmet, is really gives an interesting perspective and puts a fresh lens on the Israel Defense Force and the teenagers that make the Israeli army what it is. The organization that created it, Jerusalem U, was literally on base with us for 8 months. They were filming us during live fire exercises while we were jumping out of planes. We always had cameraman popping out of bushes and windows taking pictures. All this.
Kind of made the training a little more fun, though.
Well, honestly, it's so difficult that you really don't have time to deal with a cameraman. I found myself at the age of 23 in charge of 120 soldiers, 120 human beings. So you literally have your hands full.
Yeah, that's kind of stressful, and they're all just out of high school.
Yeah, for sure. So, and so they were really able to capture the process that we go through, the coming of age, really. It's about the difficulties and challenges that we have to face on a day-to-day basis.
And every person at the age of 18 is required to join the military. Is that correct, male and female?
Yes. So for the males, it's 3 mandatory years, and for the girls, it's 2 mandatory years. And the film itself focuses on 5 soldiers, 4 male soldiers and 1 female soldier.
And tell us this. Okay, if everybody knows that they're going into the military when they complete high school, then do you go to college after that? Is that sort of the career track you guys go on? So you go to college after.
Yeah. That's how we do it in Israel. We have those 3 years of army. It's kind of a few gap years,
mm-hmm.
And then we go to the university.
Now, some I'm assuming, like our army and other branches of the military, they stay. Do they decide, you know, they get in there and they realize this is something they want to do for a career and they decide to stay?
So in Israel, it's a bit different. For officers, they can stay longer. I myself stayed for 5 years. And my girlfriend, which was also an officer in the IDF spokesperson's unit, stayed 6 years. But for regular soldiers, they usually do the 3 years, and they don't have an option to continue.
So you have to be an officer to continue. And if you choose to continue, can you make that a life's path? I mean, can you stay for 20 years or whatever you want?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. In some cases, not only officers, but in most instances, it's officers, and you can turn it into a career until you retire at the age of 45, and then you can continue on to do more if you want. For me, it was always clear that I went to the army by necessity and not by choice. My future is in electrical engineering and physics, and that's what I want to do with my life and do good through that.
Nice. Because you're in Philadelphia right now, correct?
That's correct. What brought me here really is, if you'd have asked me a year and a half ago when I finished my service, if I'd be going around the States and sharing my story and speaking about Israel and my experiences, I'd think you were crazy. After 5 years, you kind of feel like your life has been on pause and you want to just continue on with what you think is important in life. And so I found myself doing the SATs in Israel and going on after the army trip across China by myself 2,000 miles and hiking in New Zealand a few hundred miles. And it was during that time that I met a lot of teenagers my own age from over a dozen countries. And they were asking me a lot of questions about Israel. Naturally, they were interested. But they were ridiculous questions based on propaganda and lies and misconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I realized that there was this whole other war going on, in international media and politics and on campuses, and that I couldn't sit on the sidelines and watch, and that you don't really need a uniform to defend Israel.
What is the mentality of the average 18-year-old high school student? What do they think about being mandatory to join the military? Are they looking forward to it? Are they dreading it? Do they like the policy? What do they think?
Well, I'm sure I don't need to tell you what 18-year-olds think about. It's mostly booze, partying, and girls.
Yeah.
But it is something that sits in our minds, and everyone, you know, it's like here in the States, everyone's interested in what they're going to study and applying to different colleges and places to start their studies. In Israel, we have tryouts to the Army from 11th grade when you get a letter from the military summon, and you start doing all these tests, some physical, some mental tests. You get a lot of these interviews and physical tryouts, and you get selected into different units.
That's just a whole different mindset. Do you find that? And how long have you been in the States for a while now?
I've been in the States since October. I actually went back to Israel twice for reserve army duty, which every citizen in Israel that was in the army in a combat unit needs to do until the age of 40.
Mm.
It doesn't matter if you're a banker, lawyer, engineer, CEO of a big company, 1 month every year, you put your family, your friends, your job aside, and you come back to the Army.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I did not know that either.
For a month, huh?
Well, I bet our kids, our 17 and 18-year-old kids probably seem really immature. In, I mean, I'll just say it. It's probably rude if you say it, but I can say it, and you can just, you know, nod silently. But
You know what? You don't realize the difference until you actually come out of that bubble in Israel. Because it seems ordinary when you're back home.
Sure,
when
you grow
here,
fast.
You still see the difference.
Well,
I think it has to do a lot with the responsibility that we find ourselves having at such a young age.
You know, one couple of things that I got from the film. First one was as these kids are enlisted, watching them develop a sense of patriotic awareness.
Sure.
And then also, as a result of everybody being in the military, the sense of community. Your entire community supports your kids that are in the military. They all know what they're going through, and they support them through the process. Did I get that right? I mean, is that kind of the general census?
For sure. And you know what? I've been getting a lot of questions, I think mostly after the film American Sniper came out, about post-traumatic stress. And in Israel, although it exists in much slower quantities because of that involvement of the community, because your father was in the Army, your brothers were in the Army, your neighbors were. So you're in a very, it's in your society. Everyone knows what you talk about when you come back home. It's not something very far away across the ocean, and whenever something happens, everyone hears about it in the news. When I go on a combat operation on one of the Israeli borders, I know that only 2-3 miles from there, there's a village, one of my country's villages, and if I won't be in that spot, in that place, my citizens, my people will get hurt.
See, it's an amazing sense of national awareness and pride, and you have a great you don't have the whole dissenter problem like we do here. You have all these people who have weird misconceptions about what's going on in the world. You live in the part of the world that is constantly in the news. We're going to come back with you and talk about this a little bit further. Take a really quick break here. You are listening to We the People Radio. We're here with Aviv, who is in the film Beneath the Helmet, From High School to Home to the Home Front. You will love it. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed for me,
Israelite,
sir. Get up in the morning, slaving for bread, sir, so that every mouth can be fed.
Welcome back to We the People. Our topic today is a film called Beneath the Helmet. I just want to put a little blurb in here about the synopsis before we get back to our guest. It says, from the creators of the PBS featured documentary from Israel, film Israel Inside, How a Small Nation Makes a Big Difference, Beneath the Helmet illustrates how these young men and women are defending not only their homes, but also the values of peace, equality, opportunity, democracy, religious tolerance, and women's rights. The lessons they learn along the way are lessons that can be appreciated, understood, and internalized by the film's main target audience. I'll tell you what, the promotion of your, the way your country is organized and the way you defend yourselves is really unique. Is there any other country that does this, Aviv?
Well, not to my knowledge.
Okay. I didn't think so. But I think it really changes the way you guys look at your country. I think it probably makes your country a lot more patriotic.
I think it definitely does goes a long way into doing that. As you said earlier, before we went on the break, I think we do have our fair share of crazy in Israel too.
darn it!
And you know what? We are one of the maybe the only country in the world that can't afford making a mistake. Because when that day comes, Israel will cease to exist. So we don't have that privilege in many instances.
You know, we see over here on the news. Of course, our news is bought and paid for. I think everybody knows. But we see a anti-military movement every now and then on the news in Israel. How big is that idea over there? Are the folks that don't like the military, are there a lot of them over there, or do most of your folks realize that you have to have a strong military?
It's a necessity.
A necessity,
well,
yeah.
There's a few aspects to that question. First of all, for every two Jews you put in the room, you have at least three or four opinions. And that's being a democracy.
They come from their mothers.
Which I think is a positive thing, to have a discussion and debate and not agree on things. That's okay. That's how it should be. These anti-military groups and it could be anti-military, anti-capitalism, anti-Netanyahu, as we've seen this last few months.
I want to get to that.
So there's a lot of different anti-groups, and I think that in the end, common sense prevailed, and we saw in these last elections that there's still a very strong support for if it's Netanyahu and if it's the way Israel, I think at least, should run, which is maybe a bit more to the right.
Now, how many people do you have in your army? I don't mean like the actual number, but I'm curious about that too.
What is the size of your military?
Right, but I was curious how many of them come from Israel. Don't you have people from outside the country who do come and fight?
Yeah, we do. I'd say about 11,000, not from Israel.
No kidding.
How big about is your ground force?
About half of them from the United States.
That's pretty awesome.
And do you know the size of your ground force, or is that something they kind of keep?
I can tell you whatever's on the internet, which is about 150,000 is the active duty, and about three times as much in reserves.
Sure, and then you think about it, everybody who's living there is fully trained and gets an update regularly. That makes a huge difference.
That's our main military force. It's the reserves, not the regular active duty soldiers.
Sure.
Now, as far as your active duty soldiers, you know, you mentioned you just had an election. What is the the sentiment as far as your president now is? Do they have?
I bet your military likes him.
Yeah. Do they like him? Do they have his? Or does he have their support?
Well, I can tell you what I can tell you what I think. To tell you what
we only care what you think.
150,000 soldiers think is kind of difficult.
Well, I know what our soldiers think about our president, but that's a whole different story.
Well, ours is a prime minister, but I think that in the army we have a very healthy norm that politics doesn't go through the gate. And what that means is that as an officer, I would not speak about my political beliefs at all with my subordinates. And if I'd hear any one of the seventeen commanders under me speaking about his political views, I'd punish him severely. Mm. Same would go to the soldiers, because I know it sounds a bit mind-boggling in the States. Maybe the only topic we talk about more than politics is the weather or sports. but in Israel, it's very strict. Because we're at such a young age in the army, it could have a very big impact on their worldview, and we do not want to brainwash anyone, and we do not want to have any kind of impact on what they think.
Well, that's kind of great, actually. And yet, we saw the interview, I forget, I think it was in the trailer where that girl stood up and was asking questions and basically was pro-Palestine and anti-Israel. And that's how much of that do you see now that you're out of the military, and especially over here?
Well, I was accepted to the Technion University in Israel, which is like the MIT here, for a dual degree in electrical engineering and physics, and I was already supposed to start, and I put that on hold and came here because of that, because I've been hearing a lot of anti-Israel, anti-Semitic, and a lot of lies and propaganda that have been said.
And do you find that really prevalent here as well? Or do we just see a lot of it on the news? I mean, it seems like we see tons of that
for
all the time.
I've come across it in a lot of different places. In a lot of instances, it's ignorance. And in a lot of other places, it's a lot of lies that have been left unchallenged, and they've become common knowledge. I think that's one of our most important things we need to do, is to challenge these lies so that they don't become the truth. Because a lie left unchallenged becomes the truth. That's what's been happening.
Absolutely. And so if we were going to click off a list of those, where would you start? What's the biggest one that is just, if you could just erase it would be great.
Well, I've got all sorts of questions on all the spectrum of crazy, from do we go to school on camelbacks, and through someone that told me he knows everything about the Israeli politics, and I was like, okay, well let's get started, it was like, what I don't understand is why there's the Palestinian conflict when everyone knows it's because you limit the fishing in Gaza. Stop limiting the fishing and you'll solve the whole problem. Like, what? Really?
Wow.
That's the reason? It was actually in San Francisco, that specific...
Oh, yeah, that kind of explains a lot.
Like, go Google it, I'm not going to even bother. And on the other hand, there's a lot of name-calling and things like that, like apartheid, which every time I hear that, I'm personally offended for South Africa, that those that did suffer this type of regime, which... discriminated based on color. You had different hospitals for black and white. You had different blacks couldn't vote. They had different public transportations. And in Israel, that's not the case. There's a few Arab parties and representatives that just got elected and are in our parliament. There's doctors, lawyers, CEOs. They're not discriminated in any way. So that's something that's been thrown quite a lot around. There's even apartheid week on campuses.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah, I know they tried to make that an issue in the last election over here in our news, that there was some discriminatory statements made about the Arab vote, which I thought was really ridiculous.
You know what? If anything, the Arabs have more rights than duties in Israel, because they're not required to serve in the army, and so they do less. They can go to university earlier, can start their studies, their careers earlier. You'll find them in all the top universities, really as equals.
And so you have a fairly large segment of the population that's Arab that are not citizens.
That just live in Israel.
That just live in Israel, they have citizenship. Some of them actually volunteer to serve in the army, which I think is beautiful. We have Druze, which are not Muslim per se. It's a different sect in Islam. We have desert nomads, which also serve.
So you don't have to be a citizen to serve?
No. They're all citizens.
You have to be a citizen.
Okay.
All right, we've got to come back and clarify that, because we're kind of knuckleheads. We need all the education we can get. We're happy to hear your opinions and thoughts, both. We're going to come back with Aviv. We're talking about the film Beneath the Helmet, From High School to the Home Front, but we're also talking about just the concept of Israel and what's going on there. We'll be back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
See it right now, man, you gotta teach about freedom. Gotta win it, gotta put yourself smack dab in it. Hey, tomorrow. Hey, tomorrow.
You're listening to We the People Radio on AM 1460, Community Talk Radio for the North State, KCNR.
Welcome back to We the People. You're joining Aaron, Bill, and Bob. Our guest is Aviv Regev from Beneath the Helmet. It's a film. You can actually watch it online, which is what we did, at beneaththehelmet.com. The link is on the website. And Aviv is a lieutenant. As a deputy platoon commander in the 101st Paratrooper Brigade, he was responsible for the safety and logistic needs of his soldiers. Grew up in the Golan Heights and spent several years in New Jersey when he was a child. At 23, he was in charge of 120 soldiers and was Eden Adler's direct commander. That's one of the guys in the movie. Having now completed his Army service, Aviv will be... Now, this says you're commencing studies at the in Haifa, but that's not actually true. You're in Philadelphia. So I think maybe my intel is incorrect here.
No, it's correct. I got accepted to the Technion, which is in Haifa, and I postponed it by a year. So I'm going to be starting there this coming October.
Oh, okay. All right, so we're still right. Well,
so you're right on.
Okay, so what else are we missing here that we get such a weird, you know, skewing of the news? What?
Well, we don't.
What else do we
news.
Need to know besides watching the movie, which is obviously very good?
Well, I think that what people maybe sometimes, because of what the media decides to show and a lot of the negative aspects it focuses on, people don't realize that in the end we're really teenagers with hopes and dreams and even fears, and what we really want is to live our lives in peace and happiness.
You know, I saw that in the movie too. These kids that joined the Army, I mean, they a lot of them never handled a weapon before. It's not like they grow up, like a lot of kids in this country. They grow up with a gun, they hunt, they do all this stuff. And in Israel, a lot of these kids never touched a gun before they joined the military. And it was amazing to see the transformation and how quickly they adapted to what they had to do. And it was
well. They're in their own
inspiring.
Country, protecting their own country,
that's
which
right.
is different. They're not being sent to a foreign place.
I'm really glad you brought that up because it's important. And I said that earlier that we go to the Army by necessity, not by choice. And that's another misconception out there. We don't hate the enemy. We don't hate the people that we need to fight. We go to the Army because we want to protect our own, our family, and our people, and our country. And that's what gives us a lot of strength, and that's why we go and do what needs to be done. Not because we hate anyone or because we want to do anyone harm. That's why it's called the IDF, Israel Defense Force, and not the Israel Attack Force. We just want to defend and protect what is ours.
And you know, I'm really glad you said that because the perception in our media a lot of times is Israel has all the latest technology. They have, the education, and they're really out there just expanding and trying to push their borders out, and that's really not the case, is it?
It's really far from the truth, and just as an example, you could look at this summer and what happened this summer, and how Israel did everything in its power to avoid confrontation and. While a terrorist organization, Hamas, did everything in its power to lead cynically and irresponsibly its own people into a war, which is tragic, and I wouldn't wish that for anyone. And while that operation already started, it was doing everything in its power to maximize the casualties and use its own people as human shields. 162 of their own children died digging terror tunnels. They were buried alive, their own children, because of these confrontations. And on the other hand, you see Israel using all its advancements, all the technology that it has to minimize those casualties, if it's to call buildings before they're bombed, if it's to throw out flyers out of planes, if it's to cancel missions because of the amount of casualties that could result in it. So the question really is, you know, who is really responsible for the way that things are going, are happening, and who ultimately in the end needs to change its worldview in order to us to really have peace.
Well, I think that's one of the things personally I respect about Israel is when they finally decide it's time to fight back, they've, I think, let the situation go a lot longer than I think in a lot of other countries would let it go. But then when they decide it's time to fight back and stop the threat, there's no fooling around with it. It's not a political war, which is something I think our country really needs to learn from. If you're going to go to war, the purpose is to win and get it over with as little loss of life as possible, and then you're done. These drug out 5-year engagements
where we don't really fight anybody.
Yeah, we don't really go in there to win. It's just it ends up costing a lot more lives, and Israel doesn't do that, do they?
Well, Israel had its fair share of burns, you could say. We were in Lebanon for quite a while, for almost 18 years, and that's not something we want to do again. I do agree with you on that, and it's, I think, very important to do the things strategically and exactly what's necessary and not more than that. And I do like to see that my government takes responsibility and does it very cautiously and doesn't, you know, just run off into any war there is. But what we do need to realize, and that's also another misconception out there, that every terror attack, every rocket in Israel, because it's such a small country, is a strategic attack. For example, here, if there's a terrorist attack in New Jersey, God forbid, no one will feel it in Colorado.
True.
This summer, a few rockets put 3.5 million citizens into bomb shelters for the whole summer. Now, that might not sound as a lot, but that's half of Israel.
That's a lot.
Try to imagine half of the United States in bomb shelters for the whole summer.
And see, that's what people don't realize is, I mean, if we only had one city in this country that had to hide in bomb shelters for more than one
night.
That
was getting shelled on a regular basis.
That was getting shelled.
People would flip.
People would freak out. And yet, you folks go through this on a regular basis.
That was one really good thing I thought about in the movie, and I don't remember, which guy it was, but he was saying that his bedroom was the bomb shelter in the family home. And he showed the steel plate that closes off the window, and the walls were really thick. And he said it was great as a kid because if he heard, you know, the loud noises outside, he knew that he was in the right room. And then the family would run in there and be in his room. And I thought, how weird for a little kid to feel safe because he's sleeping in the bomb shelter of their house. I mean, it's like it was super normal to him. And as I'm listening, I'm thinking, oh, honey, you know, that's not exactly what everybody else is having to deal with. It's a different program altogether.
Yeah, it's a different world.
So when you come here and you just you just get to wander around and you know you're not getting shelled at all, is it a little weird? Is it kind of great?
I mean, I feel safe in Israel. I have to say that. That's another. If we're already talking about all those things, you feel safe.
Oh,
in
I
Israel.
Bet you do. Seriously,
when you walk in Tel Aviv, it feels just as safe as walking in Wall Street or in Miami or in Vegas. It feels safe, and that's something that thanks to our very strong army and a lot of intelligence. And a lot of the way that everything is built around these threats that you don't really come across them in the day-to-day life.
Oh, yeah, I bet it feels really safe.
That's,
because
that's interesting because
the whole population is trained.
Yeah.
Well-trained.
But yet somebody on the chat here said that, you know, before they die, they want to visit the Holy Land. And I think to myself, I would like to do that too, but would I be safe? And I know a lot of people that have gone over there and never had a problem, but I think when we're inundated with our media with just all the negative that goes on over there, you tend to think that's the last place on earth I'd want to go on vacation. But now you're telling me you feel safe there. And That surprises me.
Completely safe, especially when I know there's such a strong army out there protecting me. And even this last summer, completely safe. Of course, that if you run into Gaza or something like that, no one can guarantee your safety. But as long as you're in the metropolitan area, in Jerusalem, in Tel Aviv, and in 95% of Israel, you won't even come across anything.
Isn't that interesting? And you guys, do all the people own guns? I'm assuming, if you're all in the military, everyone knows how to use them. Do people own guns or no?
On the contrary, it's actually very difficult to have a gun in Israel if you're not serving currently in the army.
Oh, really?
And if you are serving in the army, only if you're in a combat unit, after a certain amount of time, you'll be allowed to go home with that gun. And other than that, you'd have to have a special circumstance, either live in a dangerous area or work in security for you to carry a gun. And that's something that's quite different than what we have here in the States.
I saw
a few months ago an ad for a bank account. If you open a bank account, you get a free shotgun. So quite different.
Yeah, welcome to America.
That's funny because I remember seeing a video
I know what you're going to say.
There was a loud noise in a store in Israel, and everybody whipped out their pistols. So that's not true. Everybody isn't packing over there, huh?
There are. You'll see a lot of people on the streets with guns, but it's not that every citizen owns a gun. I can tell you, in my family, no one owns a gun.
But they actually know how to use them. So that I don't know which is better, to have them or know how to use them. Because I'm thinking know how to use them is probably a bonus. Interesting.
That's for sure.
So I don't know. Do we have to take a break? Are we ready for that? I know we have one more to fit
in.
We
can do it now.
All right. Let's do one more quick break, and then we have Aviv till the top of the hour, and then he probably has a life to go live. We won't hog up his whole day here. You are listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
You're listening to We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
And we're back. You're joining We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You have everything about today's guest and the film, Beneath the Helmet. I think that you'll find it to be incredibly interesting. And the website, beneaththehelmet.com, has a ton of information, has all sorts of bios on all the guys that were in the movie and gals, where you can see, where you can go to screenings, communities, high schools, campuses. It's got a great soundtrack, actually. The movie has got a very interesting soundtrack. There's some good information about that. You can watch the trailer. You can watch it online for like $2.99. I think you can buy it. I think it was $9.99. You can actually buy it. And well worth watching. It really gives you a look at what goes on in Israel and the Israel Defense Force, how it's comprised, that these kids go from high school to the military and then back to real life again. It's a view that you don't that you don't get anywhere else, I don't think. How did you wind up involved in this film, Aviv?
Well, that's a good question. First of all, I don't know, maybe in the description you were saying, it's beneathhelmet.com. There's mm-hmm. no the in between. Because of the...
It actually...
www.beneathhelmet.com.
Oh, so you're just, right. I've been typing in beneath so the helmet, know. But I think it was correcting it when I went in. Good call. Thank you.
Yeah, just so people know how to get there.
Yeah, I'll fix that online.
They can also see where there's screenings nearby, or if they want one in their community, church group or synagogue, they can also apply for that there. I got involved really on the first day of training when I recruited 120 soldiers right out of high school. I had these cameramen popping out of bushes and taking pictures from windows and from all over the place, really. And they had all the right paperwork and all the right authorizations. And from that point on, they were with us for 8 months, literally filming us the whole way. And I think I really feel like I, tagged along for the ride. But the amazing people that actually made this happen and had the vision 3 years ago to see how relevant this kind of film would be today are Jerusalem U and its founder, Rafael Shore, the CEO and founder of the organization that came up with this idea. And so I'm very grateful that they put this film into motion, because it's definitely something that's not been shown and talked about.
Exactly. And when did you start with this? How long ago?
I started in October to go around the States with the film.
Right on. And when they approached you and started filming, how long ago was that?
That was March 2013.
Okay, so it takes a little while to get these done.
Yeah.
But the timing couldn't be better, honestly, for
sure.
You to be traveling here.
Unbelievable.
When you travel about and give your talks, do you get a pretty good turnout?
It depends where and when. I've been to 25 universities so far, 60 communities,
oh, wow.
and at least 50 radio shows. I'd say that in the universities, it depends on the week, if they're having exams that week, if it's finals or just after the break or something, that would be anywhere between 100 and 10 students. But you know what? I'd even come for one, because that's all it takes to impact one person's life. And
well,
don't know
and that really that doesn't goes. Surprise me, those kind of numbers at a university in this country. Our universities are so liberal that any kind of a military subject would
Do they ever wind up protesting you or things like that?
Not really. I've had a
Good.
Few people come to say their opinions, or to just give these these name callings and things like that. But I tell them I know how to deal with that. I tell them that I've put off a year of my studies by a year to come and give answers. And that I understand that the United States is based on the freedom of speech and sharing of ideas. And if they want to come and ask questions and we can talk about it and debate about it, that's great. If they came to toss accusations, they can do that too and leave. Don't waste anyone's time. I know students have been putting off homework and tests to come here. So
that's pretty good.
That usually solves it.
Nice.
If not that, then pressure from their peers.
What's the biggest misconception that you find here about this whole idea of, because it's a very new idea, if we would have people reinstitute the draft and kids would go into the Army right after high school?
Well, I think that we need to realize in that regard that you can only cut the pie so many ways. Your army, the Army of the United States, is roughly 2 million soldiers right now. If you turn it into a draft like in Israel, it would be 27 million soldiers. So that's quite a lot of money going into training, equipment, and then deploying these soldiers.
Sure.
Which there's controversy on how you deploy these 2 million soldiers. Now there will be 27 million. And that will affect education, the economy, the health system, if there is one.
Yeah, that'd be a huge budget there.
Yeah, you know, that was a quick thing I thought of a while back. We've got a few minutes left. I was curious, do you guys have anything equivalent to our Veterans Administration or something like that? Are there benefits for you when you get out? Do they pay for your schooling, or is it just like, see ya, go back to real life?
For sure, it's very appreciated in the Israeli society to have served in a combat unit, have served at all, and especially in a combat unit, if it's scholarships or even getting to into the university, if it's finding a job. You know what? Even with the girls, it's something that helps in the Israeli society. It really opens up a lot of doors, and you could say it's for a lot of teenagers, it's really a ticket into their adult lives.
Interesting. And so if you are injured in the military, like here they go into the Veterans Administration system, which is something we talk about quite a bit and is kind of broken at the moment. Do you have that, or you just funneled back into regular life, you know, regular medical care, that kind of thing?
We definitely have that. And if you are going to get injured in Israel, you want to do that in the Army, you'll get taken care of very well.
That's cool. And that system works pretty well on your end.
That's from my experience. I'm sure that, you know, there's ups and downs and nothing's perfect.
Sure.
But from what I know and from the soldiers that are my friends that have been injured, they've been taken care of very well, very, very well.
That's excellent.
That's great.
We can learn a lot from you guys. You do a great job with your airports. Your military is well run. And I know they're really feared. My brother is retired Special Forces, and he said, your guys had a great reputation. Well, great for you, because people go, uh-oh, you know, the Israeli army's coming. So that's awesome.
I think it's because of the way we train our soldiers. We focus a lot more on the mental capacity and why we do things, on the motivation. And that gives a lot of strength to realize that you're doing things because you want to protect your own and your people and your family, not because of any other reason out there. And so a lot of our training revolves around that, just to realize, to make our soldiers realize that their mental barriers are not what they seem, and that there is really no limit to what you can do. And that's why we're considered such a good army, and that's why we'll walk further than anyone else, and we'll carry more weight, and then at the end of the day, we'll get the job done.
That is fantastic. We so appreciate you spending the afternoon with
Absolutely.
Us. Absolutely. And I hope you enjoy your travels in the U.S. If you're, we'll watch on beneathhelmet.com. The is not there. It's beneathhelmet.com, and you can see where the screenings are around the country. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Aaron,
thank
Bill.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for joining
Aviv.
Us.
We really appreciate it. We hope to talk to you again on a different day.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.